You're listening to The Rachel Maddow Show.
Rachel's blogging. Read it right now at maddowonline.com.
Welcome back. It's The Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Happy Friday. If you have been searching the internet machine for that perfect TV show that meets your porn tube, meets MSNBC, meets Twitter, meets Popfly, meets Yodio, meets Splashcast, meets Zillow, meets Trade Sports, meets Meets.com, like everybody needs that, then you need to do the following. Open up your browser and type in the following web address, MarinVCedar.com. But don't do it right now, because the hosts of MarinVCedar.com, Mark Marin and Sam Cedar, are here. You can do it in a moment after I talk to them. Hi, Mark, and hi, Sam. Nice to see you guys.
They can do it now.
Hi, Rachel.
Then they won't focus on what you're saying.
That may actually help us.
Before you start talking about yourself, Sam, can I just congratulate you, Rachel, on your success?
Thank you.
And I enjoy watching your television show.
Thank you very much. I was...
I'll second that then.
Wow.
Oh, we have agreement already?
Yeah.
You're great on TV.
Thank you. I got to go on the Conan O'Brien show, and while I was there, all I could think was, Mark is so much better at this. Mark is so much better at this.
No, you're so good on camera. It was great to see, because I am not generally happy for people I know who get successful.
That's actually true.
I find it as a personal spite against me, that they're only successful to spite me, but I was very happy to see you.
Turns out I am a flash in the pan. You will be delighted to hear.
What are you talking about?
It's all crashing down.
No,
congratulations on that.
Really? No, you want to be a guest on our show then? Because we've got a juggernaut.
You've got a lot more falling to go before you become appropriate for our show.
We actually know all our viewers by name, by a chat room name.
Aww.
Yeah, it's cute.
Wait, so 3 p.m. Eastern every weekday.
Every weekday,
You're live, but then at MarinVCedar.com, you can see the previous things that have happened live captured.
Yes, that's captured, right. And segmented and moved around.
You can download the audio podcast at iTunes, and very soon we'll have a video podcast.
Really? You can just download it from
iTunes?
That's terrific. I'm going to do that later.
And where are you filming it? Here?
Right where you're sitting.
Yeah, we shoot it right behind, actually, where you're sitting.
Well, because we're sort of office roommates. We share office space. And every time I hear yelling and screaming, I assume, either we're having another CEO being arrested in Guam somewhere, or you guys are filming. I mean, there's a lot of...
I could just be screaming.
Or you could just be having a feeling.
Yes. There's a lot of times I'll just start screaming profanities about Joe Lieberman. That happens with a fairly regular occurrence.
Yeah, and a lot of times I'll just start screaming about Sam. See, that's the way it goes. He screams about Joe Lieberman. I scream about him. And it's genius. It's just comic brilliance in every second, isn't it, Sam?
Arguably.
Do you guys get along?
Arguably. I mean, it depends on what, I don't know what you mean by that.
Here's a stock answer to that. We've known each other a long time, Rach, but we've never worked together. Do you understand? So we're kind of feeling it out, and usually it seems like we get along, and when we don't, it's actually evolving into a fine comic rapport. Initially, not so comfortable.
Marin V. Cedar is actually what we anticipated being the name of the lawsuit that's going to end the program.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
We're planning ahead.
Yeah.
Do you guys actually have political disagreements about, do you have different opinions on the bailout? Do you have different opinions on whether the Blagojevich thing hangs on Obama at all? Do you disagree on stuff like that, or you just disagree temperamentally on how to talk about things?
I think it seems to be more temperamentally. Sam generally disagrees with how self-centered I am, and I disagree with how strident he can become. And in the middle, we have...
Is there any disagreement about how self-centered you are?
No, I understand what you're saying, Sam, and I enjoy listening to Sam try to explain things, and Sam enjoys my sort of broad-based poetic analysis of things and goes, okay, and then moves on into what he does. See,
yes, if we did Marin complimenting Cedar or Cedar complimenting Marin, it wouldn't be as dramatic as Marin v. Cedar.
There's definitely an arcane Semitic tension between us.
That's right.
So can I...
cynicism versus pessimism.
Let me try to exploit that. How'd you decide it was going to be Marin v. Cedar instead of Cedar v. Marin?
Oh, he got asked to do the show first. That was basically...
Yeah, that was it. I basically said, I'm not doing this.
A chronological decision?
Right. Well, not really a chronological decision. I said, I'll do the show if Sam can do it and my name comes first. Right. That was in my contract, literally.
All right, let's talk politics. Bailout. Senate Republicans killed it because they couldn't break the UAW fast enough.
Well, I was watching a show last night, actually. Mm. And
I had
Robert
sort of
Reich
the International playing behind me as I was yelling about it.
Well,
yeah.
Robert Reich was on, and he's talking about this wage parity thing. What I don't understand, I mean, I can understand why the Republicans are doing this, because they just want to basically crap the bed, and they think it's going to benefit them politically, whether it's because they want to punish Michigan and Ohio, or because the trend of them voting Democratic, or whether or not they want to protect their own interests with their foreign auto companies in their own states.
Or they're just
or
mad
they just
at the
want
UAW.
To crush the unions, because the unions were very helpful to Democrats, continue to be, and are antithetical to their ideology. But what drives me crazy is where the optics of this. Where are the Democrats coming out and saying this isn't about wage parity? The Republicans specifically want to lower the wages of American blue-collar workers, and on top of that are allowing foreign-owned entities to define what our wage structure should be.
So so I think it's the age-old problem of the Republicans really not understanding why people won't work for nothing.
Well,
it just doesn't make sense.
They're forming a plantation caucus.
Yes,
these
exactly.
Southern
Where
Republicans
are the Democrats making this argument? This, the optics of this are horrible.
I'm not a Democrat, but I'm making that argument. I mean, that's the thing, is that I'm making that argument, and then I'm trying to find somebody to book who will go along with me. It's like, can I book John Tester? No, he's with the Republicans on this. Can I book Max Baucus? No. Have Blanche Lincoln? No.
Well, there's a half a dozen Democrats who voted with the Republicans on this, but I mean, I'm just looking for anybody who's trying to make this argument, I mean, you know, whose job it is to make this argument, who to come out and simply say, like, you know, even in losing, why can't you get out there and say, the Republicans are now arguing that we should lower the wages of blue-collar Americans.
And that's
Excuse
the principle
me?
They're willing to sacrifice the American economy.
But
on.
Is that also sort of an act to make people realize that how many blue-collar Americans are there really? What do we really manufacture here anymore other than need and appetite? I mean, how many industries do we really have? I mean, is this how can this be popular is my question.
You can just measure how many are going to lose their jobs if these fail. I mean, you know, the way it's going to just sort of, you know, there are going to be these concentric circles of waves of people losing their jobs if these companies go under, you know, never mind the actual people who work for them, but the people who provide parts, the people who provide recycling stuff to provide parts, the dealers, the service departments. I mean, on and on and on. The reverberations of this, I think some outfit in Ann Arbor said something to the effect of 2.5 million people.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying, this sort of supports my idea that Barack Obama's presidency is going to be all crisis management, and people should lower their expectations, because if he can just keep us all from fighting for food scraps behind restaurant dumpsters, it's going to be a successful presidency.
That's the problem, is that the next few years are going to suck so badly we can't even imagine it in terms of the economy. And he can do things to make it suck slightly less badly, but it's still going to suck. And nobody's going to say, like, the Obama years were great years.
No, it's going to suck. But the real question in my mind is, this is a massive opportunity. This is the shock doctrine theory, but with an opportunity where, you know, it's not the boys from Chicago, theoretically, who are in charge. Now, you know, guys like Goolsbee actually happen to be.
Right.
But you have an opportunity here for him to actually not just rhetorically make big strokes, but to actually do something serious.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think this bailout bill was just a way to punt to allow Obama that opportunity. And, you know, you got the Bush administration terrified that, oh, damn. We're really going to get stuck.
We're
going to
be remembered for the Depression, second one.
There's a reason that generations of Americans had portraits of FDR on their walls in their living rooms, and it's not because FDR was remembered for good times. It was that he was remembered for having steered the country at a time of crisis.
I just don't understand what's going to happen to all these millions of people without work. I mean, it's always been my belief that the primary reason that Republicans were so against a national health care plan was that the system as it stands now requires turnover. It needs people to die, that they're that cynical, that there's nothing we can do to take care of them. So if they really can't adapt or just re-evolve gills and enter the ocean, we don't know what to do with them. I mean, I'm petrified for New York. I mean, the way this place looked in the 70s and 80s when the economic, when there was a downturn, I mean, what's going to happen here? Is it going to be homelessness and chaos and flea markets on the street again? It's really scary.
Well, the opportunity here, I think, Sam, you're right, that there is an opportunity here. And what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to figure out if we can build a strong economy around the idea of making ourselves a stronger country. We're going to have to figure out if we can build jobs through the government starting stuff in order to make the investment at home, to make it in our infrastructure, to make it in our schools, to make it in our in the things that make us a stronger country.
I'd be willing to help out.
That aren't for the investor class.
Right.
We know we can do that.
A public works program.
Yeah.
Well, we know that. Well, we know the answer to that. The answer is yes.
Can we do it politically? Can we pull it off?
Is there the political will to do that? And it starts, I think, with just, you know, the American people. The best hope that we have for this is that the American public, you know, as they weather this storm, start to tune in and start to realize that there are some implications to what government does.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just sit back and say, good, I don't want the GM to get
My tax dollars.
You know, as opposed to the fact that, like, you know, when the Citibank thing came, that thing came and went so quickly with $30 billion going out the door and $300 billion worth of loan guarantees.
Over a weekend.
You couldn't even, you know, it was like there was not even a news cycle on how fast.
Right.
Like, we got a problem. Done.
Do you see that as a success of the Republican administration or a failure? I mean, it seems to me, like I was thinking about today, that this payoff and this, you know, trillions of dollars going out and unaccounted for and just redistributed when no one knows where it went, initially thought it was a tremendous failure, but it seems it was just the punchline to this administration getting exactly what they wanted.
Well, I feel like the money had to probably be spent in order to shore up the banks in some way.
Mm-hmm.
It was just spent in a way that was completely reckless and counterproductive.
Duffel bags in Iraq. It was just like people walking around with millions of dollars and handing it out with no accounting for it.
Yeah.
Money had to be spent, but it was also a question of what we got for that money.
Exactly.
And
spent in a counterproductive way.
I would also argue that the means in which that money was distributed, there's just a little bit too much coincidence for me between Hank Paulson's prior job history with Goldman Sachs.
And who gets to hand out the money now?
Who gets to hand out the money? You know, AIG, we salvaged AIG. The biggest winner from that was Goldman Sachs. They were owed something like $20 to $30 billion.
Well, now AIG executives are getting $4 million retention bonuses.
Of course. And, you know, but the UAW has to have their back broken or this whole industry is going down.
Because they represent people.
Of course.
Those bastards represent human beings.
Mark Maron and Sam Cedar are the hosts of Maron v. Cedar, which is live at 3 p.m. Eastern weekdays, MaronVCedar.com. God bless you guys. Good luck. If I could crack a champagne bottle over you, I would.
Thank
you. Very exciting. Congratulations.
Nice to see you.
Thanks.
This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. There is a link to MaronVCedar.com at our website, DateMaddowOnline.com.
The Rachel Maddow Show.
You're listening to Rachel Maddow.